You know, as a political scientist, David Hawkins, I've watched endless debate over the filibuster. Maybe you could lay out what some of the rules are right now and how some of the Democrats are now calling for changes.
Sure. The rules of the Senate in the most simplistic sense are that to easily get anything done requires unanimity among the Senate. The way you get anything started in the Senate is to ask for unanimous consent to do something. Most of the time, the simplest things are granted by unanimous consent. And as soon as that's not granted, the next threshold to do almost anything is 60 votes. It takes 60 votes to overcome anybody objecting, which is the simplest way of starting a filibuster. When we talk about filibusters in the modern-day Senate, we are not, and this is important to know, we are not talking about Jimmy Stewart's grandiloquent performance in Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. That hardly ever happens. Instead, just announcing that you're filibustering is generally enough to gum up the works. You can raise this filibuster, threaten this filibuster, at almost every stage in the legislative process. This is, for reasons that would take longer than the time we have on the air, but that have everything to do with the increased partisanship and the close divisions in the Senate over the last decade, more and more members of both parties, when they have been in the minority, have been using this threat more and more frequently. And now it is the Democrats' turn, because they're in charge, and they'll have 55 votes next year, which is not 60, they'll have 55. It is their turn to say it's time to, quote, reform this. 10 years ago, when the shoe was on the other foot, it was Bill Frist and the Republicans who said it was time to reform this, and there was almost a crisis. Now Harry Reid and the Democrats say it's time to, quote, reform this. And what Reid wants to do is eliminate only one of those filibuster threat options. He wants to prevent the capacity of the minority to filibuster a proposal to take up a bill. He says you should still be able to filibuster on the bill, but you shouldn't be able to filibuster the idea of getting started on the debate on a bill. So that's one of the things he wants to do. And the other thing he wants to do is make it so that when you do filibuster, you have to do the full Jimmy Stewart. You have to find the people who can actually come out and give speeches all day and all night to slow things down. You can't just say, I object, and then go off and have a fundraiser and leave the Capitol.
Two observations. So one is that on the old Howdy Doody show, which very few of us can remember, there was a character named Phil E. Buster. Did you know that?
Yeah, I do.
That's the first thing. And the second thing is that a lot of these guys, in the back of their mind, say, we better be careful here because someday we'll be on the other side, as you just mentioned, and we don't want to have that tool. For example, had Romney won and the Congress had gone and the Senate had gone and the President had gone and the Supreme Court had gone Republican, those Democrats would not want to see the filibuster go away.
That is exactly right. And so as a consequence of that, it is some of the older and more veteran senators on Reid's own team who are saying, now, wait a minute, this isn't a very wise idea. We've known life in the minority at least as often as we've known life in the majority. And, you know, be careful what you wish for, because you're in control. Our side's in control now, but we might not be forever. Might not even be after the next election. Honest to goodness, they really might lose. An early look at the 2014 Senate races suggests that the Republicans would have another chance to take back the Senate next time. So be careful what we wish for, and we might not go along with Reid. Now, this leads us to Reid's most controversial idea of all, which is, so you might say to yourself as we talk about this, well, if the Republicans object, they can just mount a filibuster and prevent Reid from changing the rules, right? You can filibuster a proposal to change the filibuster. And the answer to that is maybe not, that there is some parliamentary view that there is sort of a gossamer, thin, theoretical moment in time at the very start of the new Congress when you can cram through a change in the rules
by majority.
On a simple majority vote.
And that's called the nuclear option?
That's what they call the nuclear option. And so Reid has to decide whether he really wants to, quote, go nuclear at the start of a new Congress, annoy a few of the old bulls on his own side, infuriate everybody on the Republican side, and potentially, you know, poison the well for the next 2 years. Because, you know, nothing is more important to a senator than his or her own personal power, and taking away that personal power is something that will be hard to forgive for many of them.
Talk to me about Grover Norquist. We got a couple of minutes on that. Here's this guy who comes out with a tax pledge, and he makes all the Republicans sign it and others sign it. And I'm sort of wondering, what has become of him, and what are the ramifications?
He is working hard to keep his power, his perceived power, intact by being a little bit loose around the edges about the meaning of his pledge, which has been around. That pledge has been around since, I think, 1986. It's been around for a long time. Something still like 95% of the Republicans who are going to be in the new Congress and the current Congress have signed the thing.
Not our guy Chris Gibson says he won't sign it.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
I think I don't know the answer to this, but I'm guessing that fewer of them signed it this time than ever before because, you know, I know I've talked to many, many members, some of them off the record, who say, you know, when I signed that thing back in 1988, 1990, 1992, I had no idea that he was going to say it applied, you know, in perpetuity. That's ridiculous, but now I feel hamstrung by the thing.
Well, you know, as Al D'Amato was once quoted to have said, that was then and this is now. So, you know, things change. And who is Norquist?
Grover is, he's been around for a long time. He's been doing Americans for Tax Reform for so long and has become such a media darling. He's very good on camera. He's very compelling when he's interviewed. The press love him. He loves the press. He thrives on that symbiosis of being always there with a clever soundbite. And what his power is to punish people beyond that, I don't really know, except that he does, in addition to being the head of Americans for Tax Reform, he does sort of act as sort of the de facto coordinator of the conservative lobby movement. He has a meeting every week with the leaders of about a dozen sort of think tanks and other advocacy groups on the right. They plot strategy, and they sort of look to him as their kind of informal guru.
Well, let's put it this way. He must be old because people just simply don't name their kids Grover anymore.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe this is just in retribution for being named Grover.
Could be. David Hawkins, we love talking to you. You're a great guy. David Hawkins is editor of Congressional Quarterly's Roll Call Daily Briefing. He has covered Congress in various positions at CQ since 1995.